Okay, let's close the eyes. Just sitting up comfortable, straight. Recite Om three times. Inhale. We'll open the eyes softly now. We'll begin with the invocation to Sage Patanjali, and you can either keep the eyes closed and listen in, or you can read on the screen and follow along. Okay, so inhale. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya ch vaidyakena Yopakarotam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. And one of you, Merrily, you want to read the meaning loud? Yep.
I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to Sage Patanjali, the highest among the Munis, who has presented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise of Ayurveda, of language through his treatise of grammar, and the impurities of the citta through his treatise on yoga, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Very good. Thank you. And this is a good time to start because we just recently started a new round of study of the sutras. This is only the third session, okay? So we haven't done much at all. We started with number one sutra, number one in chapter one. Okay, so that's how we've been going. And very, very quickly, I'm going to go through all the sutras very briefly and quickly just to kind of refresh your memory as to what we've done. Okay, and then we'll continue from where we left off. Okay, so this is the first sutra, which says that Atha Yoga Anushasanam, which means that look, here now I'm going to present to you the whole science or the discipline of yoga. Okay, so this is the teacher, you know, Patanjali. Assumption is that he was talking to his students who has been preparing for a long time, given them instructions in many other fields and areas of study or something, and then finally he says, now you guys are ready for yoga, so let's go ahead. All right. So now I'm ready and you are ready, okay, for yoga. Okay, then it was, the second one is yoga chitta vritti nirodhaha, which means, now he's defining first yoga, what yoga is. Yoga, he says, is the ability to calm the mind, to still the mind, and make it free of all the fluctuations that are constantly troubling the mind, bothering the mind. So that's the definition of yoga. So it's all about the mind, as you can very clearly see. Yoga is all about the mind. Okay. In fact, let me go back to this invocation itself. Remember, in this invocation, it says that Patanjali is given the credit for three things. To purify the body, he gave us Ayurveda. Purify the body. Physical ailments, physical impurities, he gave us Ayurveda. To purify the speech, he gave us the most authoritative commentary on the grammar, Sanskrit grammar. So that's purifying the speech. And to purify the mind, he gave us yoga, Yoga Sutra of Patanjali. So it very clearly says that it's all about yoga. I mean, all about the mind, to cleanse the mind, purify the mind. That's the whole purpose of the practice of yoga. Okay? So then that goes on to say, tada drashtuhu swarupe avasthanam. That means once the mind has been stilled, once the mind has been calmed down, when it has no more fluctuations, no more distractions, no more disturbances, then you can see clearly through the mind, and then you can realize your true self, your true nature. So that true nature self-realization happens only if the mind has been completely stilled down, completely. Because that's the true nature. Okay? So now I'm self-realized at this point. Okay? That's what it's saying. Okay? And then, if you don't do that, if you don't calm the mind, then what happens? Then we are constantly bothered by what's happening in the mind. Then the mind takes over, the ego takes over, and we are constantly struggling to stay peaceful. And that never happens because we are not able to calm the mind. So the choice is ours, whether either we calm the mind or we don't calm the mind. If we calm the mind, we are in control. We are self-realized. If we don't calm the mind, the ego is in control, and we can stay happily miserable ever after. That's what we do, happily miserable, right? Okay. So that was yoga definition. Those four initial four sutras, most people believe they are the most important four sutras because they set the foundation for the definition and understanding of what yoga is all about. And we need to keep those in mind constantly. Okay. And then, the word used was vritti, right? Chitta vritti nirodhaha. Vritti is all the changes that go on in the mind. Okay, so now this sutra is talking about what are the vrittis in the mind, what constitutes these changes in the mind, what causes all these fluctuations, these changes in the mind. Okay, so what he has done is, what Patanjali has done is, kind of categorize them into five broad categories. You know, and everything can be kind of thought of as belonging to one of these five, you know, whatever is going on in the mind. Okay, so what this one is saying is that there are five types of fluctuations in the mind, and each one of them can be either full of klesha, klishta, that means it's either painful, it can give you some kind of a discomfort or pain in the mind, suffering, some sort of suffering, or they can be without pain, without suffering. Okay. Interestingly, you know, it says aklishta, without pain. Okay. So there's no indication of whether it will be something pleasant. It doesn't say pleasant or unpleasant. It says painful or not painful. So, you know, people believe that there's some hidden meaning in that.
It's how we perceive it, right?
Yeah. Okay, so fivefold. And then what are these five? So that's where he actually lists all these five vrittis in the sutra number 6. So these are the five vrittis: pramana, viparyaya. So let's repeat these words because they are important. So let's all repeat this. So let's go through these words: pramana, viparyaya, vikalpa, nidra. The word is smriti, but when you make the plural, it says smritayaha. The original word is smriti, singular, smriti, plural is smritayaha. Because they are all five, so it is all five are smritayaha. So these five are the five types of vrittis, or five reasons for vritti. Okay, so what are these? Pramana is the the true knowledge or correct knowledge of something. Viparyaya is wrong knowledge. Okay, this kind of
misconception.
Misconception, yeah. Wrong knowledge or misconception. Viparyaya. Vikalpa is imaginary stuff, you know, that stuff that we can imagine or we do. Nidra is sleep, deep sleep. Okay. And smriti is
memory.
So stuff that's hidden in our memory, whether it is conscious, subconscious, superconscious, super subconscious, or whatever, you know, deep inside our memory. So those are the five vrittis, or five types of fluctuations or changes that can go on in the mind. Yes.
Do dreams fall under vikalpa?
Vikalpa, yes. Dreams fall under vikalpa because they are imagined by the mind, yes. So the dream state is not considered as a part of sleep state in this context. Sleep is here, dreamless, deep sleep. That's what he's talking about.
So that's kind of, it says fantasy here, but it's the same idea.
Hmm?
It says fantasy on
in yeah, that's vikalpa.
Yeah.
So that's dream will fall under that category. Yeah. Imagine stuff.
And also, so fantasy only has dreams, or it's like, you know...
No, everything.
Even people like imagine.
Mm-hmm. Imagine stuff, you know. You pull something from your memory and then imagine something, or you hear a word and then start imagining what it could mean, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll come to the meanings, you know, details
things
here.
You're imagining in the future, they're going to happen in the future.
Whatever, you know, depends. So you hear a word and then you start imagining things, you know. Or hear something. That's what the definition is. And you'll come to the definition right off.
So
right.
These five, he's saying that can be painful or not painful.
Not painful, right. Any, all of these five, yeah. Right. So, then the pramana, okay. The first one is pramana, which is the right kind of knowledge. So there are three different categories of right knowledge. So what are these? Let's repeat these words again. Pratyaksha,
pratyaksha,
anumana, agamaha, pramanani. So pratyaksha is something which is sensed by the five senses, basically something that is, you know, direct knowledge. Pratyaksha means direct knowledge. Okay. Aksha means eyes. Pratyaksha means directly in front of the eyes. But when, you know, in all these sutras, in our literature, eyes are used generally to specify all the five senses in general. So they always say, they will list one of these five senses and then they'll assume that you're talking of all the five senses. So pratyaksha doesn't mean just with the eyes, even though aksha word means eye. Okay? Pratyaksha means direct perception through the five senses, all the five senses. That's what pratyaksha means. And anumana means what?
Inference.
Anumana. Okay, so that means you have previous knowledge through pratyaksha of something. You have to have previous prior knowledge through pratyaksha, through direct knowledge of something. And then something else happens at this moment now, and you are able to correlate with what you have seen or heard or understood before, and then you can anumana or infer from that some true knowledge. Okay? You got that? So, the most common example in our ancient text is smoke in the mountain. Okay? So, at a very distant, you know, place, you're seeing, at a far off place, you're seeing some smoke coming out in the mountain. Okay? Now, you can only see the smoke, right? But your anumana or your inference is that there is fire there. You don't see the fire. Okay? But from your past experience, from a past pratyaksha, you know that smoke is always associated with fire. So that's how it's given that same thing. Okay? So pratyaksha, anumana. And what's agamaha? Agama?
It's like testimony from a
testimony from a reliable source. Then what can be a reliable source? Most commonly, they say our ancient scriptures. They are the most reliable source of knowledge because they are supposed to contain the truth that was given to us by these yogis, And this truth was revealed to them, not thought about by them. It was revealed to them through direct perception from sources outside of themselves, right? That's how they claim, right? So this truth was revealed to them through their deepest state of meditation. And then they put those truths into these scriptures. And then when we read these scriptures, we get the true knowledge. Okay, correct information, correct knowledge about life and everything else. Okay? So most common scriptures are what? You know, Vedas, Upanishads, in the context of the Indian philosophy, Upanishads, Gita, Yoga Sutras, you know, these are the ancient texts which are most reliable. In every culture and faith, they have some text which is considered to be the most reliable, right?
The Yoga Sutra is a standalone book. It was like a direct, just like Upanishads and Vedas.
Well, see, Yoga Sutra is a part of those, what they call Shat Darshana, six darshana, six philosophical streams. Okay, so it came as an outgrowth from these ancient scriptures like Upanishads and Vedas. So these six rishis, they picked up certain aspects from these ancient scriptures and brought about six different philosophical streams. Okay, the goal is roughly the same, but different approaches, different thought processes went into them. So what are these six now that you mentioned these? So six are, anybody remember these?
Sankhya.
Vedanta.
Yoga.
Nyaya. Nyaya. N-Y-A-Y-A. Nyaya. And?
Mimamsa.
So there are six. Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Yoga, Sankhya, Vedanta, Mimamsa. Okay? So these are the six streams of thought that evolved after the Vedas and Upanishads were available. So they picked up certain aspects from these and then built and developed their own philosophical stream, so to say. And each one has the same goal of attaining self-realization eventually, but slightly different approaches, different concepts were given to them.
Thank you, and sorry for that distraction.
No,
that's the way
to hear. It's always good, right?
Yeah.
So there are some, obviously there are some, you know, some differences in these approaches given in these. So for Vedanta, for example, is fairly different in their overall approach than Yoga and Sankhya. So we stay focused on Yoga approach, not get into Vedanta concepts here. Okay.
Does Vedanta talk about meditation?
Yeah. They all talk about meditation.
They all talk about meditation.
Okay. Most of them talk about meditation. But Vedanta, you know, so the main difference, the major difference between Vedanta and the Yoga and Sankhya is Yoga and Sankhya are considered dualistic philosophies. Okay, there are two realities. When we say dualistic, there are two realities in Yoga and Sankhya. Okay, what are the two realities? Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha and Prakriti are the two realities when we talk about Yoga and Sankhya. And in Vedanta, there is only one entity which is real. Everything else is transitory. Everything else is transitory. One real, permanent, eternal entity. In Yoga and Sankhya, two real, permanent, eternal entities, Purusha and Prakriti. In Vedanta, only one. And what is it called?
Brahman.
Brahman, yes. So it's called Brahman.
Okay.
Brahman, yeah, Brahma. Brahma or Brahma,
so
Brahman.
Purusha is like the English doesn't do justice, but it's kind of like spirit. Soul.
Yes, it does justice. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, spirit, soul, self, all that stuff. Yeah, consciousness, material being. Yes, absolutely. You're right. You got it.
So it's kind of like Shiva and Shakti.
She likes Shiva and Shakti.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very true. Okay. So these are the kind of the six philosophies that are you know, that have evolved, and a lot of people study different philosophies, and we are working on Sankhya and Yoga. Okay. And then verbal testimony, you can also trust a guru, for example. You know, you have a teacher who you trust as being trustworthy and full of knowledge, and also if you know that the guru is self-realized or something, at least close, then you trust that person's statement as true knowledge. Okay? So that's agama, pramana. Pratyaksha anumana agamaha. Alright? So, this is how far we went last time, okay? This is all we did so far in the last two sessions, alright? So today, we'll start working with these number 8 onwards, okay? Sutra number 8. So let's go through the Sanskrit first. So the first word is viparyayaha. It will say viparyayo, but that's Sanskrit, okay? The word is viparyaha. Okay, so viparyaya, mithya jnanam, atad rup pratishtham. Okay, pratishtham. So, viparyaya, mithya jnanam, atad rup pratishtham. Right, okay, so what does it mean now? So this is the definition of viparyaya. Viparyaya is misconception or wrong knowledge. Misconception, wrong knowledge. That's the viparyaya. What is mithya jnanam? Mithya is what?
Illusion.
Hmm?
False. Not true.
Not true, yes.
False.
So mithya jnanam, false knowledge. Atadrupa pratishtham. Pratishtham is established. So that knowledge, excuse me, so that knowledge which is kind of based on atadrupa, which is not true to its own self. Rupa is the nature of the true self, of its own self. Something that you see, but you get some knowledge which is completely opposite of what that thing is supposed to be. Okay, that's called viparyaya. So it's wrong knowledge. And the most common example given in our ancient text is? Everyone?
Rope
and a snake. So snake in the rope, basically. Okay, so in a dimly lit night, you know, where there's a very dim light, you're walking on the street and you suddenly see something curled on the street, and you run away fearing that it's a snake. Then, you know, one guy who's next to you, who's coming by, he says, "Why are you running?" He says, "There's a snake there." He has a flashlight in his hand. Okay, so he says, "Oh, let me see." So he throws the flashlight, and it turns out to be just a rope, you know, just coiled under, you know, on the street. So what that means is that there are two things, right? One is avidya, which is wrong knowledge, right? And there is ignorance because of that. Now you're ignorant that what this is, and then there is light, okay? So there's darkness, there's light. So that's why, you know, in our prayer we say, asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Tamaso means darkness, jyoti means light. So take us from darkness to light. So in this semi-darkness, I was completely misguided by my lack of understanding. Okay? Fear took over me and things like that, or I ran away because of my lack of understanding. That was avidya or ignorance. And that was completely blasted away when I saw the light of wisdom, light of true knowledge, okay? The kind of the things that we talk about, right? So viparyaya is misconception, illusion based on what is other than itself. So, atad rupa, okay? Rupa is form, so it's not based on the true form of what the object is, but something else that we are afraid of. So what it is, it's misconception. It can be refuted, contradicted, and annulled by correct cognition. That's the commentary by some commentators. Okay. So it's a misconception. Someone with double vision sees two moons, but it can be refuted by the sight of a single moon by a person who doesn't have double vision. Okay, so it can be refuted. So somebody who has better vision or better light, so to say, you can refute the misconception. Okay, common example, snake in a rope. Okay, so this ignorance is the cause of the five kleshas. You know, we just talked about the klishta or aklishta, you know, in the one of the sutras. These vrittis can be full of pain or not so painful. So these kleshas, this is what is defined and explained in chapter 2. And we'll get there eventually, okay? So, but just for the sake of knowing these five kleshas mentioned there, they're listed here. But does anybody remember the Sanskrit words for it? Laura does. Of the five kleshas? Avidya? Avidya, yeah. Next one? Asmita.
Okay.
Avidya. Asmita is ego. Raga. Raga is attachment. Dvesha is aversion. And abhinivesha is the fear of death. Okay, so those are the five kleshas. We'll come to that in chapter 2. Okay, but that's what it is. Because they are the ones which cause all this ignorance. Okay, and then we want to get rid of this ignorance. Basically, that's our goal eventually.
So ignorance, can you say here, is like aversion to know the reality? Or
it's not aversion. It is just lack of knowledge.
Lack of.
We're not averse to knowledge. It's just we just don't have it, you know. So there's no aversion to it, but we just don't have that knowledge. So we are looking to get true knowledge. Basically, that's what we are doing. Okay. Now, what is vikalpa? That's the next sutra. What is vikalpa? So what it says is. So let's read the Sanskrit first. Shabda, jnananupati, vastushunyaha, vikalpaha. One more time. Shabda, jnananupati, vastushunyaha, vikalpaha. All right. So Shabda is the word. Shabda means the word. Okay. Shabda jnana means the knowledge of the word or knowledge through a word. Shabda jnana. Okay. Anupati is to follow. So you have, you know, some word which is stated. Okay. So you hear a word, but vastu shunya. There is no substance associated with that word. Okay. There's no object associated with that word. Shunya means absence of something. Shunya means no, nothingness, right? Shunya. Vastu means object. So, absence of an object, but there is a word associated something, all right? And that word will cause some imaginary concept in your mind now. Even there is no object. So, common examples are God, right? God is a word, right? And there is no object associated with. So, it's vastu shunya. There is no object associated with God, right, that you can perceive through the five senses. So it's going to create a vikalpa in your mind. Imaginary understanding of God, what God is, who is, where is it, you know, who knows what it is, right? So that's, you know, and almost all abstract nouns can fall under this category. Almost all abstract nouns. Love. Compassion, you know. All abstract nouns, right? They are words, but there is no object associated with it. And the moment you say love, everyone will have a different impression of what love is. Everyone. You imagine stuff. Okay? Time, for example. Okay? There's no object associated with time. It's just there. So you imagine stuff, right? So when there is no real object that defines something, then you hear a word some similar to that object or some word that you hear, and it creates all kinds of imaginary concepts in your mind. And that's called vikalpa. Okay? So you hear these, and then it creates all kinds of impression in the mind. That's vritti, basically, that we are talking of these five vrittis, right? So vikalpa. Not a result of correct cognition or inference, only driven by words without an actual object. So the word, time is not an actual object but creates a vritti, concept of time when heard. Okay, so that's the vritti called vikalpa. Okay. Now, we're talking about nidra. Nidra is sleep. All right, so let's go through the Sanskrit first. So it says abhava pratyaya alambana vrittihi nidra. So the first word is abhava pratyaya alambana. Okay, vrittir nidra. Okay, so that's the full sentence now. Abhava means absence of something. Abhava. Okay. Pratyaya. Pratyaya is the content of the mind. Alambana means support. So I'm just giving you word by word meaning so you know exactly where all these meanings come from, right? So that vritti, which is caused by the absence of any content in the mind. That happens when there is deep sleep, right? There is no content in the mind at that time. But it says, still there will be some impression left in the mind at that vritti. When there is no content in the mind, abhava pratyaya alambana, with that support, what's left in the mind? So supported by no content in the mind, abhava pratyaya, what's left in the mind? That's the vritti we call nidra. What does that mean? It's a vritti of nothingness, basically, nothingness. But everyone will notice that when we wake up, we always can say whether we slept well or we did not have a good sleep, based on that vritti. Whatever the impression was created by that sleep, you can always say that I had a good sleep or I had a disturbed sleep, not good sleep. Okay? That's the vritti that's created by the sleep process. All right? Deep sleep. So this is, again, coming back to your point, dreams are not part of this part, this deep sleep. Okay? Sleep is a... So let's say sleep is a vritti because you can look back and say I slept well, etc. No other vrittis are present during deep sleep. Dream may be thought of as imaginary cognition. That's what we said. Good. Already there. Okay. Dominated by the guna, tamas. So remember we have been talking about the three gunas. The three gunas are, everyone remember the three gunas? Rajas, tamas, and sattva. Okay, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So those are the three gunas. And vritti, nidra, the sleep is always dominated by tamas. Okay, so we have to be deeply in a state of tamas to fall asleep. The only thing that's active during sleep is consciousness. That's the only thing. Otherwise, there's no other activity in the mind, right? There are no thoughts, no feelings, no emotions, no mental activity, no physical perception. In the deep sleep, there's no physical perception, no mental activity. But the only thing that's active at that point, consciousness. Without that, you're dead. That's consciousness. Okay. So now we are moving to the number or the last one of these five vrittis, which is called Smriti. Smriti is memory. So let's go through the Sanskrit part here. So Anubhuta Vishaya. Asampramoshaha. Smritihi. So again, Anubhuta Vishaya. Asampramoshaha. Smritihi. All right. So, Anubhuta means Anubhava. Anybody remember the Hindi word Anubhava, Sanskrit word?
Experience.
So, Anubhuta means experienced. Anubhuta means experienced. Vishaya is subject or some act, something that you experience. So, whatever has been experienced, okay? Asampramoshaha. Sampramoshaha means we can let go of it, lose it, or get it stolen or something, you know, that's sampramoshaha. When you add the prefix a, not letting go of it. So not letting go of things that have already been experienced, that's smriti, that's memory. Okay? So, you know, Patanjali uses the words very beautifully. You can see the beauty of these words and how everything has been defined so nicely. Okay? So, Anubhuta Vishaya, all those things that have been experienced by us, we don't want to let go of those experiences, and not letting go, whether we want to or not, it just happens, right? And they go into our memory, okay? So that's Smriti. Memory is the not letting go of an object or image of subjective experience. Now, this English translation is from the book by Sachidananda. And I have mentioned before, there are some translations which I don't agree with, but that's okay. You know, that's just the nature of these things. Okay? So, memories are a result of all the five vrittis. Every one of these vrittis will cause a memory. Okay? So, if you experience something as direct experience, imaginary experience, anything that we experience in life, even smriti itself is a vritti. It will cause more vritti. You pull something out from the memory, think of something, and it will cause further vritti. Okay? So all five of these vrittis are going to cause memories. It can result in a pain or pleasure. And cognition creates impression, which manifests eventually as memory in the mind. Okay? So whatever we do, remember, well, we talked about this whole concept of the four functions of the mind. Anybody remember that?
Four. Like the memory and the
right.
Ego and the buddhi.
Yes. Manas, mind. Okay. So manas, buddhi, chitta, and ahankara. You know, those were very commonly mentioned four functions of the mind. So what the ego does, as we mentioned, that's what it creates. The samskara. So there is an actual event that we experience, actually something that we are experiencing in life, okay, is going to create a pure memory, actual memory of stuff that happens, right? Ego puts a label on it, okay? It says, I like it, I don't like it. So this meeting, for example, you know, we're coming here, and, you know, this is an experience for you. When you go back, it's going to create a memory in your mind. So, you know, next day you can go back and recall that you went for this meeting, right? On such and such day, and there were so and so people were there. That's all pure memory. Okay? Actual, factual memory, so to say, which is what we need. But at the same time, the ego is going to put a label on it. I enjoyed this meeting. I liked it. I may want to go back again next time. That's all put by the ego. Or I hated this meeting. This guy was useless. I never want to hear him again. You know, things like that. So, those are samskaras and vasanas, but they all are embedded in the same memory bank. The pure memory and all the samskaras and vasanas, which are all the likes and dislikes, and whether I want it or don't want it, or like to repeat it or not like to repeat it, everything gets embedded in the same memory bank.
So it seems like
based on how you create this impression, sometimes that determines whether it even becomes a memory. Because, like, there's certain situations where one person will remember an event and another one will not remember it all.
Right. That's the ego, you know.
So that controls whether you even remember it at all.
Right. Well, that depends on how what kind of impression it creates in your mind. I mean, we go for a walk, we go through so many things, but we don't remember everything, you know. But you're right, you know, we don't remember everything, obviously, which is good.
There are painful memories that we try to forget, but not always.
We cannot, right? If we try, it comes back more forcefully. So, but this is all a play of interplay of the ego and the intellect and the mind. You know, that's what we talked about in the previous session. Okay, so.
So, what's the best way to handle it then? What's the best way to handle it?
Practice yoga. That's what Patanjali says. Practice yoga.
Meditation, more pranayama.
He says 8 limbs of yoga. We'll come to that. He says 8 limbs of yoga. Practice all these 8 limbs of yoga. But most important is meditation. Of these 8 limbs, the most important limb is meditation. But then you too have to prepare even to meditate through all these 8 limbs. Otherwise you can't sit and meditate. Right? So that's his formula. That's what he says. Practice. That's it. And we're coming to that. Okay, so what it says are, like other vrittis, memories may result in pleasure or pain. Cognition creates impression, which manifests as memory in the mind. Intelligence records the process and instrument of cognition. For example, sound or a sight, the actual form, the actual words or object from the memory. Okay, that's all in the memory. All right, everything goes in the memory. Like I said, samskaras, pure memory, vasanas, whether we like it, dislike it, everything goes in the memory. Okay, so now, how do we calm the mind? Okay. How do we control all these 5 vrittis? That's what you were talking about, right? It's coming right here. All right. So the next sutra, number 12, is, let's read that, Abhyasa Vairagya Abhyam Tannirodha. Abhyasa Vairagya Abhyam Tannirodha. Okay, so now he's saying that the Nirodha means suppression or control or diminishing of elimination of all these vrittis that we are talking about is done by what? Abhyasa and Vairagya. So he gives us 2 formulas, Abhyasa and Vairagya. So these 2 will eventually help us control the mind, calm the mind, okay, and bring it to a state of nice peace, tranquility, and stillness by Abhyasa and Vairagya. Tannirodha, okay?
This is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita also, the 2 things.
Abhyasa vairagyena, kaunteya. Yes. Very good, yes.
Same words. Hmm? Same words.
Same words are used in Gita also. Very good, yeah.
Just knowing that is not enough.
Hmm?
Just knowing it is not enough.
No.
You still have to practice.
Yes. Yes.
Knowing it is just the first step.
Practice. Yes, practice. We can, in our culture, they always say, you know, there are so many people who call themselves pandita, right? Pandita is people who have studied everything, they know everything, but no practice. That's called a pandita. So.
It's also used colloquially, like it's a pandit, you know,
just bookish knowledge, but not.
Bookish knowledge, right. Yeah, so panditaha, right? So, you know, these thoughts were coming to my mind. You know, I went through a little health crisis recently, right? So, I there were moments when I was actually feeling down, Then in a brighter moment, I will say, oh my God, I've been studying Yoga Sutra for so long. Where is all that practice now? You know, I'm not able to apply that to my own self now, you know. And I was feeling down, literally, you know. And then I would come out and practice my meditation and then start thinking of these things. Oh, there is a lot, you know, I have a long way to go. So, you know, this knowledge is there, but it has to really be deeply ingrained in you so that it automatically gets applied in every situation in life. But for that, it's a journey. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so let's read the next sutra also. Not sure why I put them all on one page, but all right. So the next one is Tatra Sthitau Yatnaha Abhyasaha. Abhyasaha. Okay, so Tatra Sthitau. When you combine it, it becomes Yatnobhyasaha. The word is Yatnaha, but it becomes Yatnobhyasaha in Sanskrit. Okay? So Tatra means in that case, you know. So when we're talking about both Abhyasa and Vairagya, among these two, Sthitau. Sthitau means stability. So being in this state of stability, okay, the effort, yatna means the effort. Yatna means effort. So the effort to maintain a steady state of mind, that's called abhyasa. Okay? Alright, abhyasa. So effort to maintain a sthitau. Sthitau means a steady state, so to say. Sthiti. Sthiti means stability. So effort to maintain stability, that's called abhyasa. So let's see what my notes say. Now these notes are based on commentaries that I read from other sources, okay? So this is what I have written here. And stillness is the one-pointedness of the mind when it is without rajasic and tamasic vrittis, okay? So when the rajas and tamas vrittis are there, then there is no stillness in the mind. Then it's always going into the past or the future. So that's when rajas and tamas are dominant, then the mind is either in the past or the future. When it is dominated by sattva, then there is a possibility that you can stay in the present moment. Okay? Then that's the only time you can be in the present moment, when the mind is dominated by sattva. Okay? Now, one who is neither pleased or displeased on receipt of sensory input which is pleasant or unpleasant is called a calm person, has a steady mind. This is also from Gita, actually. You know, the statement is from Gita, but that's very applicable to what we are doing here. So we always, you know, an experience that we have, we either label it as pleasant or we label it as unpleasant. Okay? But whether it is pleasant or unpleasant, can we stay on an even, calm state of mind? Okay? And again, the Bhagavad Gita calls that state of mind. Since you mentioned Bhagavad Gita, it says samatva bhava. Okay, samatva bhava, samatva buddhi, etc. You know, those are the couple of words that they use. Samatva means, in English we can call it equanimity. Something like that. Okay, so that's being on an even keel, as they say, you know, no disturbance, no change in the mind. So whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, stability of the mind, that's called samatva bhava or sthitau. And that's what we are trying to achieve, that state of total stability, evenness.
So some people say, oh, that person is so dull, so boring, but I know there is a difference between samatva and someone being dull and boring.
Of course there is a difference. Samatva is a very highly elevated consciousness level. You know, it has nothing to do with dullness or boring. No. They're two different things. Totally. Okay. So then, Yatna means effort. So to make the effort to maintain that stability, that's called abhyasa. So these commentators say, what does effort mean? Then they give all these characteristics of effort. Zeal, enthusiasm, courage, steadfastness, patience, pursuit of spirituality, and an attitude of service. These are commentators, you know. So I picked it up from some book. So these are the attributes of this word called effort, yatna.
So it incorporates all of that.
All of that.
Effort, right?
Yes.
So deep
then. Yeah. Right. So we need to be enthusiastic in whatever we're practicing. We need to have a zeal and courage to go through it, not be defeated by it all the time. And then steadfast, you know, patience and steadfast, really stay with it. Steadfastness. And pursuit of spirituality. Service, attitude of service is very important, you know. We're not doing something for selfish goals all the time, not for selfish goals, but with an attitude of service. Okay? So these are some of the attributes of this word practice. Okay? So now he defines practice or abhyasa here. So the again, let's go through the Sanskrit. Satu. Dirghakala. Nairantarya. Satkara sevitaha. Dridabhumihi. So one more time. Satu. Dirghakala. Nairantarya. Satkara sevitaha. Drida. Bhumihi. Okay. So, sa means that. Saha means that. So that, okay, that means here, abhyasa. Okay. So he's referring to abhyasa or the word practice, abhyasa. Satu, dirghakala. What is dirghakala? Long time. Okay. Dirghakala. Nairantarya. Without interruption. Antara means gap. Antara. There is a gap between some two things. We call it, there is antara between these two, right? In Hindi and Sanskrit we do that, right? Antara. Nairantarya, no gap. No gap, no interruption, no disruption. Satkara means what? Satkara. Reverence. Satkar means reverence or devotion or faith or trust. And those are the kind of attributes of the word satkara. Okay? Even honoring somebody, we call it satkara.
Yeah,
when we welcome somebody, we'll say satkara. Okay? That's out of reverence. We welcome out of reverence, you know. We offer reverence to a person who is visiting us. You know? That's called satkara. So reverence or devotion. Okay, so those are the kind of meanings of satkara. And asevitaha, practiced. Sevanam, sevatam. Sevanam means to practice or something, you know. So, something that is practiced or that is applied for a very long time without interruption, and with a sense of devotion, reverence, and trust, etc., that ultimately attains dridabhumihi. Bhumi means ground. Bhumi means ground. Drid means firm ground. So that gets established very firmly on a very firm ground, so to say. What are we talking about? Abhyasa. The practice is firmly grounded only when you apply all these three attributes to that practice. Okay, so that's the definition of abhyasa. All right. Even though the word abhyasa is not used in this sutra, but it is saha. Saha means that which we have talked about already. Okay, interruption in practice allows accumulation of negative vrittis, negating earlier gains. Okay, that's an important thing to understand. That if you disrupt your practice, then if you have gained some, made some gains in the past, and we all go through this, right? Everyone goes through that. You give up your practice for some time and you fall back. I always jokingly say, people keep coming back to my classes. Why do you come back? Because, I started 6 months ago, I did it for 1 month and I fell out of it and I'm back here. So I always jokingly say, this is good because that, it assures the job security of the instructor. That's why I have a job, I said. Well, that's true. It's true, but
I've tried doing it at home and it's not the same.
Definitely it's not the same.
It's a group and
I know that's but it's
No, but both are required,
Both
you do. So what I'm saying is group energy is great to get you motivated and get you going, but then you need that personal energy, your own individual energy to sustain that practice at home on your own. That's the tougher part. Mm-hmm. But that's very important. That's exactly what he's talking about now. Okay, so that sustained energy. No, group energy is great. I love it myself. That's wonderful. So reverence entails ascetic practices, control over sexual passion, knowledge, and unflinching faith. So these are all comments by the commentators. Okay, so when we say reverence, satkara sevitaha, that means you are. You're doing a lot of tapas. Tapas is what?
Discipline.
Discipline. Hardening discipline. Toughening disciplines. When we toughen ourselves, that's tapas. Okay? Control over sexual passion. Then only you can have reverence. And then knowledge and unflinching faith. Long time could mean multiple lifetimes. It actually, I shouldn't say could mean it. I should say it would mean. Because could imply that you can attain it in one lifetime, that's not going to happen. Okay, Patanjali says it's not going to happen in this lifetime. So you need multiple lifetimes to get there. Okay. So this is, it's what is practice then? And what do you practice? And eventually Patanjali will tell you that you practice 8 limbs of yoga. Okay, so that's what is going to get you to your final goal of calming the mind, eventually. Okay, so that's the definition of abhyasa, practice. Now he's coming to the definition of vairagya. Vairagya, all right. So, the definition of vairagyam is, let's read that, drishta anushravika vishaya vitrishnasya vashikara sangya vairagyam. Okay, so this is a long one. Drishta anushravika vishaya vitrishnasya Vashikara Sangya Vairagyam. Okay, let's now try to understand these individual words and what they mean. What is drishta?
Object. Seen.
Seen. Literally means seen. But in all our context, in the ancient texts, ancient scriptures, they use the seen or the eyes as representing all the 5 senses.
Oh, really?
Yes. It always will be seen, okay? You will see that when they talk about something and they refer to the eyes, it means all the 5 senses in many cases. Okay? So, there was another word that came up recently in discussion similar to this. I just talked about it this morning or yesterday or something. Do you remember this?
The human eye. You said something this morning.
Was it this morning? Maybe. Something was there which was with the eyes. What is that word? Anyway, I forget myself now. It has exactly had the same meaning.
The word that means eyes?
Yeah. Anyway. I forget what it was. We talked about it this morning only. Not sure what the context was.
I remember him saying something, I can't remember the word.
Anyway, okay. So, drishta here means seen. Literally means seen, but applies to all the five senses. Okay. Okay. Then the other word is anushravika. Something that has been heard not from the five senses but other sources. Okay. Something that we have heard. Maybe, you know, the example they gave is, you know, something that we have read from maybe Vedas or something, you know. Okay. So that's anushravika. And vitrishnasya, vitrishna. Trishna means literally
desire,
thirst. Trishna means thirst. Literally means thirst. But in this context, it means desire. Okay? So vitrishna, when we add the prefix v, non-desire, completely desireless. Okay? So one who has become completely free of desires. That's the guy who will be known as Vitrishnaha. Okay? All right?
What about Vishaya?
Vishaya? Where's Vishaya? Vishaya is the object of the five senses. All objects. So the five senses crave for objects which are called Vishaya. Okay? So the objects of the five senses are called Vishaya. So when you have no craving, no desire, no thirst for objects which are presented to the five senses. Okay, that person is called Vitrishnaha. That's the person. Alright? So, Vashikara Sangya. Vashika, Vasha means control, mastering. Okay? So, Vashikara Sangya means that control, the mastery of that person who has completely mastered the desire or the craving from the five senses or from something that he has read from the Vedas or something. Usually, when they say Anushravika, it refers to things like, you know, in the Vedas they say, if you do this ritual, you will attain heaven. If you do this ritual, you will attain, you know, 100 cows. If you do this ritual, you will get rain. Okay? Those are all attainments which are, you know, mentioned in the Vedas, and they say this ritual will get you this, this ritual will get you this, but that's anushravika. So you have to be completely devoid of craving for anushravika or drishta.
Desiring to have something or get something.
That's anushravika.
Expecting to get something.
Anushravika, again, through other sources, basically. Shravana means listening, hearing. Hearing. Anushravika means heard from other sources.
Okay.
Not through the five senses.
Okay.
You know, again, these are all Sanskrit phrases.
So, I got anushravika. So, drishta here means what?
Five senses.
All the five
senses. Drishta means five senses. Yeah.
And then
anushravika. Five senses and any other sources. So
anushravika. Yeah, yes.
Vishaya is the result of...
No, Vishaya is the object of your attraction.
The five senses.
Five senses, you know. So eyes may like something, ears may like something. Those are the objects of your desire through the five senses.
Yeah, and Vitrunashya is letting go.
Completely, no desire.
Detached.
detachment, yes, with Krishna. That's called vairagya. Does everyone kind of get a sense of this now?
Are you also saying that it could be longing for a certain something to happen too? You're detached from that.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes. Yes.
A certain result of something right. that's going to happen in the future.
So really detached from anything of prakriti, the material world.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, so this is the, what Patanjali is talking about, this is called the lower level of vairagya, you know, the level one vairagya. So, when I started reading the sutras and when the commentator said, this is the lower level of vairagya, I said, my God, something we have to go higher than this now? I can't get rid of my, you know, my desire for my fruits and my you know, my mango and all that. Where do I go from here?
So, your Vashikar Sangya means to control?
Yes.
Control is what is
Vashikar. Yeah, Vashikar Sangya. Vashikar is, Vash is to control. Mastery, you know, total mastery over something, that's Vashikar Sangya. Okay. So, that's the... Detachment is the consciousness of perfect mastery in one who has ceased to crave for objects, seen or unseen. So he has just, anushravika means unseen. Like I said, I'm not very fond of some of these translations, but that's okay. This gives a wrong impression, you know. It implies that seen means only through the eyes. That's not what it means here. It's all the five senses. Keep that in mind. Okay, perceptible objects of attraction may include persons of opposite sex, food, drink, music, etc. We know that. Imperceptible attractions may include paradise or heaven, achievement of siddhis, etc. Okay, those are the desires some people have. Siddhi, everyone knows what siddhi is? Supernatural achievements, siddhi. You know, things like to become invisible or become very heavy, become too light, you walk on water and all those things, you know. Those are called siddhis. Okay, so the people have desire to do all those things. Okay. And you can get those. Patanjali talks about all those in the third chapter. Remember, third chapter is all allocated to the attainment of these siddhis, these super normal powers. Okay. But we don't want to have any desire for those. They may happen, they may come, but no desire, no attachment to those. Okay? And then this is considered to be the lower form of vairagya. And then he has these steps. Now, I lifted it from one of the commentators. I'm not sure if I understand the whole thing. It says it has these steps. Initial effort, ascertainment pertains to a single sense, for example, the mind only, and then finally, perfect mastery. So there's an initial effort, and you have to ascertain, and eventually lead to perfect mastery. I need to go and think about these a little more. Yeah. Does everyone kind of get some sense of it? Yeah. Because the next is the higher form.
Okay.
Next sutra is the higher form. Okay. It's lower because the next one is the higher form.
Okay.
Okay. So now the next one is let's read the Sanskrit. Tatparam. पुरुष ख्याते हे गुण वैतृष्ण्यम दैट्स अ टफ वर्ड वैतृष्ण्यम ओके सो लेट्स डू इट अगेन तत्परम पुरुष ख्याते हे गुण वैतृष्ण्यम ओके सो लेट्स गो थ्रू द मीनिंग नाउ Tat param. Param means higher. Now this is where it becomes, because Patanjali says this is higher. Tat means from that. So higher than that, higher than what was described previously. Tat means the one that was given previously. Tat param means higher than that, superior than that. Param also means superior. So superior or higher than what was described previously is what? Purushu khyate he. Now this is a very important word to understand, because this is going to take us to the Sankhya philosophy now. Remember the word Purusha we said? What is Purusha? Superconsciousness, soul, atma, you know, self, etc. Purusha. What is khyate he? Khyati means knowledge, understanding, a deep understanding. So the one who has understood the concept of Purusha very well, that person is known as Purusha Khyatihi. So, and he eventually will have what? Guna Vaitrishnyam. Guna means the three gunas. Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Remember, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, three gunas. Are you familiar with the Sattva, Rajas and Tamas at all? No. We've talked about it here. So, you know, when we talk about this whole, you're familiar with the concept of Purusha and Prakriti? You haven't heard that either.
I've heard it, but I'm not familiar with it.
Okay.
It hasn't sunk in.
Okay. So, Purusha is the soul, okay, the pure consciousness, as they say, okay? And Prakriti is everything that we see as the material aspect of our being, everything material, which is the body. In a human form, it is the body, mind, intellect, everything that we are composed of. And then we went over the 23 elements that we are composed of. We'll do that some other time. That's called Prakriti. Okay? And the whole objective of our practice of yoga is to recognize that these two are not joined together, but they are separate. Purusha and Prakriti. And I am actually, my true identity is the Purusha, eventually. Okay? So that's the knowledge that we are trying to achieve. And that knowledge, the Sanskrit word for that is Purusha Khyati. The knowledge of understanding that I am Purusha, I am the pure soul, I am the pure consciousness. And this whole Prakriti, this whole material stuff that we have, body, breath, mind, everything, is an enclosure to give me life experiences. So I am given this whole body, this entire mind-body complex, so that I can experience life. Okay? But eventual goal of all this is to realize the self. Okay? The purpose of everything in this whole situation is that I can realize my true self. Okay? And that state is called Purusha Khyati. How do you get there? Through guna vaitrishnyam. We said trishna is?
Desire
or the thirst for guna. Three gunas. Their gunas bind us. Gunas bind us. So these gunas are sattva, rajas and tamas. That means sattva is purity. Rajas is activity. And tamas is dullness, darkness, etc., etc. Okay? So we are always bound by these three gunas. We are either very pure and calm and subtle, and because we are dominated by sattva, or we are gung-ho and walking around, running around, going for, you know, promotion, this and that. That's because we are dominated by rajas. Or we are very dull and sleepy and, you know, completely couch potato, you know, sitting there and doing nothing. That's because we are dominated by tamas. Okay, but we are always dominated by these three, and we have, you know, all these desires that are in us. They come because of these gunas dominating at one time or the other. Okay, so if I am dominated by tamas, my desire is to just sit down, have a glass of beer, a bag of potatoes, watch football, and do nothing. That's tamas. Okay, that's my desire.
Potato chips.
Oh, potato chips. I just said potatoes. No. Potato chips. Sorry.
Any forms.
Sometimes it's a mental tamas, because I know physically active, but tamas here.
Of course, yeah. Of course, yeah. That can always happen, yes. Yeah, absolutely. These are all dominated by mental tamas, yeah. All these activities. So what he's saying is that we are completely free of any desires that can be controlled by these gunas. That means we have gone past the three gunas. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, since you talked about that, the word they use is gunatita. Gunatita. Atit means beyond. So you have gone beyond the influence of these three gunas. Okay, that's guna vitrishna, guna vitrishna. And the one who has attained that state, his ability is called guna vaitrishnyam. Okay, so a lot of words here.
No, it's the whole concept is overwhelming. Will I ever get there?
In many lifetimes, that's what he said.
Cessation of all craving.
Mm-hmm.
Is that different than, because in order to live your life, you have to do a certain amount of activity just to function,
sure,
right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
So, what's the difference between craving it and just doing what you have to do to be in this maternal?
Craving means, you know, when you are craving something, usually what happens, if you are not able to accomplish that, you're miserable. Okay? Because you have that desire. To you know, you have an expect, you know, that craving develops expectation in you. Okay, so if I have craving for some food or some position in my work, if you don't get that, you're miserable. That's the whole, you know, downside of craving. Okay, that doesn't mean you don't set goals. You know, that Patanjali doesn't say you don't set goals or anything. You know, you will set goals, but Vairagya means you are not disturbed if your objectives are not met.
You're not attached to
that. You're not attached to the outcome of the of your effort.
So when you set a goal, it's almost like you're competing with yourself.
There's no competition, really. There's no competition. You just set, you know, you have to have some goal in life, right? Okay, so you set that goal, whatever it is, work towards it with full enthusiasm, like you said, all right, and then you develop that, right,
and then
embrace whatever happens with perfect equanimity. That's vairagya, not being attached to anything, not even attached to the outcome, expected outcome of your actions. Perfectly, yes. Karmanneva adhikaraste. So that's perfectly applicable
but
here.
And also the second line, so yeah, you should have goals, you should work towards it, but don't get perturbed by the outcome.
Absolutely. Gita and all these, they are all very, you know, interrelated, everything. The concepts are not different from what's in the Gita or the Sutras or the other scriptures. They're all the same. So that's a very famous sutra, shloka in the Gita. You know, in fact, it's so famous that in India, if you go to a school or even some corporate buildings or railway stations, you know, they have this inscribed on the walls of the buildings. That's shloka. That you are only responsible for your actions, not for the outcome. You cannot dictate the outcome. That's what it says. But it also says that you sit still and do nothing.
Yeah.
Okay? It says that, same shloka.
Yeah, the second line is very important.
I think of that as the journey is more important than the goal.
Than your goal, yeah. Absolutely. Destination, you set the destination, but enjoy the journey.
The journey is the important
part. Journey is the most important part. Destination will happen someday. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
I'm going to finish early today. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we'll finish soon. All right. So that's the whole sutra here. Tat param, that means what was given in the previous sutra, higher than that, superior to that, tat param, is this vairagya where you develop complete detachment from the three gunas because you have been able to attain an understanding of purusha. Purusha khyati, purusha, knowledge, understanding of purusha, or the pure spirit, pure self. You have been able to understand the reality of the pure self because you have been able to transcend the influence of the three gunas, in a sense. And that's the highest form of vairagya. And that will lead you to ultimately to your ultimate goal of yoga, which is total self-control, self-realization. Okay? Let's see what my notes say. This level of control leads to final stages of samadhi. Complete discriminative power, viveka, has been established. The gunas have merged back into their source. Okay? So those are the statements. So the gunas have been balanced out and you have attained a level of understanding of the Purusha, and that's the highest state of vairagya that we are striving for. Okay? That's what is going to lead us to final self-realization. Okay. So this is where I was planning to stop today. Okay? So, and in the structure that I have developed, I have kind of divided that into different segments, not in the perfect sequence of the sutras. So here I'm actually going to go into the eight limbs of yoga. But there is a whole section that I'm missing here, which I might take up later sometime. You know, I didn't do that. In the last round, I didn't do that. There are a few sutras which I left off in chapter one. Okay. Yeah, viveka. Yeah. Viveka is discriminating power. I know what's real, I know what's unreal. I know what's true, or I know what's untrue. That's viveka.
Vivek. How we use it commonly, though, like.
In Gujarati, it may be different, but that's how we use it.
What I understand is like the power to discriminate between
right and wrong.
True and untrue and pick true. Yeah. Right and wrong and then go.
Pick with it. Right. That's what it is. Okay, it comes from which. Which is the main root word in Sanskrit. Which. Which means to pick.
But yeah, in your day-to-day lives, well, the challenges, we can, probably we can discriminate what is right and wrong, but sometimes we are still going with wrong. So
absolutely.
So Vivek is that power to go discriminate and go with right.
Right. Ego takes over. You see, even though Viveka has, we have picked something right, but ego takes over right away.
Yes.
And then it does the wrong thing, obviously. You know.
Yeah, of course, that's a higher meaning. But because, you know, like everyday use in Gujarati, they say you don't have vivek, means you don't have the right mannerism.
That's different, you know. So this, yeah, that's not what it is, yeah.
That's why I was thrown off.
No. See, in our vernacular languages, you know, the Sanskrit words have kind of assumed different meanings. Different meanings, yeah. So, but in Hindi, we use it in the same meaning, okay?
And Sanskrit, of course.
Yeah, it's originally Sanskrit.
So what books would you recommend? I don't have any books for this, like which?
Yoga Sutra?
Yeah.
There are multiple books.
Over here.
You can look at all her bag.
Welcome library.
This is the first kind of easiest one to start with.
So which I can read at home.
This is a good book.
This is good. This also has a free PDF online. You can find Tiny.
Oh, okay, this has PDF.
Yeah, and then I like this one a lot, Bryant. And then this one is a very classic one by Aranya. So we study these four in our study group.
Okay, so we do all four.
We study all these and more in the study group. Yeah,
Where can we find
Which one should I begin
with? I think start with this.
Yeah, start with that. Yeah. That's a good one to start with.
About downloadable
PDF. Downloadable PDF. You have. I have a link on in my email that I send out every week. Mm-hmm. There's a link to that file.
Yeah, you can just Google Timely and you'll find it. It's readily.
Okay, there's a link for that. Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so this I think will be available on Amazon or anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's available. Okay. Yes.
Can I take pictures?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're ready, we can do our 5 minutes of quiet time whenever you're ready.